Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the weekly Worldview. And I want to welcome everybody back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And a lot of original thought is pumping through the studio right now as we get ready to go to air or to internet or whatever you want to call it. But it's good to have everybody with us as we delve into the events of the week. Indeed, I was, not to beat a dead horse, but I just want to reiterate, I was driving through downtown Denver yesterday, and I drove past an auto mechanic shop, that I have personally used to repair a vehicle, not more than just a few years ago, and the auto mechanic shop is no longer there. It's all been repainted with a big giant green cross, and yes, that's right. It's a medical marijuana dispensary. Yeah. Looks like a gas station on the corner with the roll-up doors, you know, the overhead doors that you might find at an auto mechanic shop. But it's all been repainted, and it is a medical marijuana dispensary. And so there you have it. Denver plummets toward its future as the medical marijuana capital of the greater Southwest. And so there we are. But let's go on. Because there is bigger news. In fact, there's probably no bigger news than this story that I pulled down from Fox News over this past week. According to Fox News, a New York man has spent his entire $140,000 life savings advertising his prediction that the world will end on May 21st. Just a scant, that says less than 2 weeks from now. The whole thing's going to be over. So if you were worried about anything, just relax. Take it easy. And one thing you've got to give to this fella, he spent his entire life savings. I can appreciate a fella who puts his money where his mouth is. If he was still, you know, if he was still contributing to his 401k, I might have some doubts about his level of belief in this particular prophecy. But one thing we can be sure of is that he believes it. His name is Robert Fitzpatrick. He's a 60-year-old fella, lives in Staten Island, New York. And he spent his savings on 1,000 subway car placards and ads on bus kiosks and subway cars in a self-published book recently titled The Doomsday Code. Fitzpatrick said the Bible offers, quote, proof that cannot be dismissed, unquote, as to the May 21st, 2011, end of everything. He says that there's going to be a giant earthquake. And he calls it the Judgment Day earthquake. He says, Judgment Day will surprise people. He says, we will not be ready for it. A giant earthquake will render the entire planet uninhabitable on May 21st, 2011 at approximately 6 p.m. New York time. So just in case you wanted to be ready for it, although he says we will not be ready for it. But me personally, I'm ready for it. Well, as ready as I need to be anyway. Because I will have an advocate on Judgment Day who will intercede for me, and he will be indeed the Son of the living God, the judge of all the earth. His name is Jesus Christ. Look into it. Okay? Do we have anything? Oh, he says God's people will be resurrected, and this will May 21st be the day that God stops saving anyone. He hopes that he is one of the chosen ones, but he could not be certain, according to Fox. He told the reporter at Fox News he couldn't be certain that he would be saved, as he wasn't sure if he was chosen. He must be. He's the one carrying the prophecy. He thinks he's not chosen? I mean, you would think that would solidify your position as one of the chosen ones, seeing as you're carrying the prophecy to the whole world and posting it on subway and bus kiosks all over New York City. He says there's just a little doubt. He says, most churches teach that if you just believe, you'll be saved. But he says, it's not our choice, it's God's choice. Well, Mr. Fitzpatrick, might I remind you that it was Jesus Christ himself who said, by inspiration through the Apostle Paul, that if you believe, that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead and you confess with your mouth, you will be saved. If you believe, you will be saved. Jesus said that. So it's not most churches that say that. It was Jesus Christ himself who said that in Scripture. And for you to be doubting Jesus Christ, I have a little bit of doubt in my mind as to whether or not you're carrying a prophecy about the end of the world. But so I guess make your plans. We have a vacation planned shortly thereafter.
Oh, no.
I hope that, well, I have a little doubt, but well, there you have it. Now, speaking of doomsday prophecies, there were several in the news this week. The most notable, not necessarily by Mr. Robert Fitzpatrick, confused Christian, probably a dear sweet man, but his doomsday scenario was nothing compared to that of Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. Last Wednesday, he gave us he wrote a letter. It's all been set up. A Democratic senator sent him a letter asking Timothy Geithner to describe the scenario that might occur should the U.S. not raise the debt ceiling. And Timothy Geithner was kind enough to answer this Democrat senator's letter with a letter of his own outlining the doomsday scenario. He says if Congress fails to lift the debt ceiling and the U.S. defaults on its obligations, he says, quote, this abrupt contraction would likely push us into a double-dip recession. That's from Timothy Geithner, doomsayer, prophet, prophet of doom, Timothy Geithner. He says, quote, a default would inflict catastrophic, far-reaching damage on our nation's economy, significantly reducing growth and increasing unemployment. Even a short-term default could cause irrevocable damage to the economy. A default on our obligations would also sap household wealth, threatening retirement savings. What's more, it could cut off Medicare and Social Security payments and cause another financial crisis. A default on Treasury debt could lead to concerns about the solvency of the investment and financial institutions that hold Treasury securities in their portfolios, which could cause a run on money market mutual funds and the broader financial system. There could be an earthquake as well. It could all be over if we don't. Ultimately, Timothy Geithner says, the biggest threat would be a crisis of confidence in the United States. Mr. Geithner, I have a crisis of confidence in the Treasury Department. I have a crisis of confidence in the United States. Now, let me try to get my head around this because I'm not an economist, as I've noted before. But if one were to find oneself in the position of having to borrow money to pay interest on one's debts, which apparently that's the position the United States Treasury finds itself in, having to borrow money in order to pay just the interest on the debt. We've got to raise the debt ceiling and borrow more money. Why can't we cut some spending so that we get to a level that we don't have to borrow money to pay the interest? Is that just a crazy, stupid idea? Is that just my economic ignorance showing through? Or is it not possible, Mr. Geithner? Well, Mr. Geithner's right about one thing. It's certainly not possible to proceed as we are proceeding. And I'll tell you what, if these Republicans, these so-called conservatives, these alleged Tea Party candidates who claim to be fiscal conservatives, if they fail to prevent the raising of the debt ceiling, there is going to be an earthquake in Washington come November of 2012. Well, that's if Mr. Robert Fitzpatrick from New York indeed turns out to be incorrect. My daughter, I happened to be reading the story. My 9-year-old daughter sat down next to me. She said, he's talking about the end of, he's predicting the end of the world. I said, yes, Nicole, Christians have been predicting the end of the world every year since I was born, since I can remember, and it probably goes back further than that. And I told her, that's why poor theology and misunderstanding the Bible, not knowing the Bible, not knowing God, not having a relationship and knowing where God's at on things, leads you to be a fairly embarrassing ambassador for Jesus Christ. And that's most of his followers are. Talking to a heathen friend of mine who we've been debating, and he said one of the funniest T-shirts he ever saw was one that said, Jesus, save us from your followers. I pointed out to him, I said, you know that Jesus is the only religious leader I'm aware of who warned his followers about his followers. So Jesus came up with that t-shirt first. But, you know, it is sad but true that a lot of intelligent, unwashed heathens remain unwashed because Christians are a fairly embarrassing lot who don't really understand the book. I mean, they have a grasp on salvation, I think, although, you know, you read this fellow from New York and you wonder, you know, what's going on, but they may have a grasp on their own salvation. I have no doubt that they have a sincere belief in Jesus Christ as their Savior, but they simply fail to appeal to the intellect of the thinking atheist, or the thinking Muslim, the thinking Buddhist, the thinking Hindu, any of that. So, anyway, I recommend to anyone in the audience who has a heathen out there who you'd like to bring into the fold, a CD set available at kgov.com. It's called Christianity 101. Pretty good stuff. I mean, it's simple stuff. Folks, this isn't that complicated. Don't overcomplicate things, okay? All right, so there's Timothy Geithner in the doomsday scenario. And now let's move to the actual doomsday scenario that's unfolding before our eyes in the Middle East right now. Let's go to Majdal Shams in the Golan Heights, which should be a dateline of Israel, but the Associated Press refuses to ever admit that the Golan Heights were ever a part of Israel or that they're a part of Israel now. Even though the last time I was in Israel, I strolled upon the Golan Heights, and it was indeed a part of Israel. But there in the Golan Heights, according to the Associated Press, there were calls on Facebook and thousands of Arab protesters marched on Israel's border with Syria this weekend past, Lebanon and Gaza on Sunday, in an unprecedented wave of demonstrations sparking clashes that left at least 15 people dead in an annual Palestinian mourning ritual marking the anniversary of Israel's birth. Israel just celebrated their Independence Day, and the Palestinians are in sackcloth and ashes mourning the anniversary of the establishment of the 5,000-year-old nation of Israel. Let's see. AP tells us, in a surprising turn of events, hundreds of Palestinians and their supporters poured across the Syrian frontier and staged riots. Surprising, says the AP. Surprising? Is it really that surprising? There's been unrest in the Middle East, as you know, since the beginning of this year, and I'm beginning to suspect that the culmination of all of this unrest in the Middle East is bound to culminate in a focus on Israel, the establishment of a Palestinian state, and the ultimate destruction of Israel. And so I'm not surprised, but apparently the AP was surprised. President Barack Obama's envoy to the Middle East, George Mitchell, resigned last Friday after more than 2 years of efforts to bring peace to the Middle East. So George Mitchell, Barry Ho, and all those have failed. And according to the AP, the fate of Palestinian refugees is one of the thorniest issues that any Israeli-Palestinian peace deal will have to address. Well, that's not the thorniest, because first of all, these supposed refugees, they ran away from the Arab armies that invaded Israel in 1948. So they were if there were refugees in 1948, they were fleeing the Arabs. Because the Jews were too busy fighting the five Arab armies that were attacking them to persecute the average Philistine on the streets. Second, and this is just a point to consider, all of those refugees, they're all dead now. There are no refugees who ran away from the Egyptian army back in 1948. Well, there might be 100-year-olds. It's quite possible, I suppose. But of the millions of alleged refugees, they're the children and the children's children, the children's children's children of these alleged refugees. And by the way, the thorniest issue that any Israeli-Palestinian peace deal will have to address is the fact that the Muslims want to kill all the Jews. That's That's the real thorny issue there. And it's going to be an interesting summer in Israel, and we'll be keeping our eye on that. And more to that issue, another story from The Forward, from their online publication. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi of Italy was at a celebration of Israel's 63rd Independence Day celebration. He praised the Jewish state as the only democracy in the Middle East. He was the guest of honor last Wednesday at an Israeli Independence Day reception hosted by Israeli Ambassador Gideon Meir. And he was quoted as telling reporters when they asked if Italy would recognize a unilaterally declared Palestinian state, he said, no, absolutely not. So did you catch that? A unilaterally declared Palestinian state. So everyone is going to, come this summer or this fall, maybe sooner, everyone and their brother is going to declare a Palestinian state. That is everyone except Israel. And apparently Italy, but where will the United States come down on that? Well, we just don't know because we don't know who is in charge. I mean, we know who is in charge. We just don't know who he is. Don't know who he's working for. But Silvio Berlusconi says he'll stand by the Jews. He says there can be no solution for the Israeli people and the Israeli state but peace with your neighbor, Palestine. No, there's no such thing as Palestine. Never was a such thing as Palestine. It's a figment of the left's imagination. It's a figment of the anti-Semites' imagination, a figment of the anti-Zionists' imagination. But it's all too real to folks like George Soros. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thanks, Eddie. Thank you, boys. Appreciate that, as the end of the world is, it's hanging over all of our heads, hanging over the heads of everyone here at the McBurney compound in the Weekly Worldview studios, but we're not all that depressed about it. We're gonna soldier on, so to speak. Although soldiering on could become difficult for our troops in Afghanistan, according to this story from the AP, Dateline of Islam is bad, Pakistan, still angry over the U.S. raid that killed Osama bin Laden. Right there. I mean, right there, you got to stop and you say, angry over the raid that killed Osama bin Laden? Perhaps, whoever this article is about, perhaps they're not our friends. Well, it turns out it's Pakistani lawmakers who are upset, and they've demanded an end to American missile strikes against Islamist militants on their soil. They did that this Saturday past. And they warn that Pakistan may cut NATO's supply line to Afghanistan if the attacks don't stop. And this is not funny. And this is nothing to be trifled with because we've got 100,000 troops strung out there on a supply line that relies heavily on Pakistan. And Barry Ho, in doing the right thing, apparently, in doing the right thing, has bungled it and botched it so badly that our alleged allies in Pakistan are threatening to cut off the supply line to our troops out there. These Pakistani lawmakers, who are allegedly our allies, they voted on a non-binding parliamentary resolution. And the Associated Press says the vote to cut off supply lines to U.S. troops in Afghanistan reflects the precarious state of the U.S.-Pakistani alliance. Precarious indeed. Well, I mean, when you're allied with people who are basically your enemy, it doesn't get much more precarious than that, and Barry's gone and made it more precarious, for crying out loud. You would think that the head of the free world and the leaders of our intelligence community would have found a way to make contact with someone loyal to us in the Pakistani. Surely there's someone loyal to us in the Pakistani government. Isn't there one or two officials that we could have clued in on the raid so that it didn't look so bad for these poor slobs in Pakistan? I mean, they've got to be embarrassed as all get out that Osama bin Laden was a stone's throw from their military academy and a half-hour cab ride from the president's house, if they have a president in Pakistan. I don't know. Maybe they have a sheikh or an imam. I'm not sure. But that's a very scary situation, especially if you are deployed out there in Afghanistan, because the supplies don't just appear. They're not shipped in by UPS from eBay or Amazon.com. So anyway, Barry, thank you for making a precarious situation even more precarious by mishandling the doing of the right thing in killing Osama bin Laden, allegedly, right? We believe it.
I believe it.
There are just certain portions of it that don't make any sense. I want to see the picture, please. I just want to see the picture. I'm surprised they haven't come out already. I really am. Let's see. Well, speaking of security breaches, I predicted that if the pictures exist, they'll be leaked, and they have not yet been leaked. So either I'm completely wrong, which is totally possible. I've been completely wrong before, right?
Occasionally.
Thank you. I've been wrong before, so I could be wrong, or the pictures just don't exist. But anyway, according to IsraelNationalNews.com, U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said last Thursday, the Department of Defense is looking into ways to pump up the security for Navy SEALs who carried out the Osama bin Laden takedown after the SEALs themselves expressed concern for their safety and the safety of their families. Yeah. Sentiment in the U.S. military and intelligence communities is that identification of SEAL Team 6 as the team responsible for the mission signified an unprecedented breach of confidentiality. A Pentagon spokesman told CNN that Secretary Gates' response should not be taken as a criticism of any particular person or officer. So Secretary Gates is upset that this was leaked, but he doesn't want to direct his ire at anyone in particular, Joe Biden. I think it was Joe Biden in an unguarded moment, which are most moments for Joe. I believe it was Joe Biden who leaked the SEAL Team 6 information. We appreciate that, Joe. Could you please just go back to sleep, Joe? Stop putting our troops in danger. I don't know. Initially, I thought maybe this was all, none of us have insight into the machinations of the intelligence atmosphere around the bin Laden takedown. And maybe there's misdirection. Maybe Joe Biden was instructed to act like a moron because everyone, first of all, would believe, Joe's being a moron again. And perhaps we've got Osama bin Laden in a secret prison in Pakistan, and we're pumping information out of him. And all of this is just misdirection, masterful misdirection. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. But deep down, I know that Joe Biden is just a moron, and that he would do something like that because he's Joe Biden. Secretary Gates is upset. The SEALs are upset. And, anyone who has any understanding of intelligence and how it works and how you keep secrets, you have to be fairly embarrassed and concerned about what happened in the wake of of the killing of Osama bin Laden. All right. Speaking of killing, I've got a story from the Culture File from the Associated Press. This is Dateline Dallas, Texas. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, May 13th, Dallas reported its 13th murder in the month of May. That was on May 13th. That's one murder a day in Dallas. A sudden 5% spike in killings comes after years of alleged declines in the murder rate. Detectives can't explain it, though some have suggested that the economy might be to blame. And that's why people are butchering each other at a record pace there in Big D. And, I love Texas, and I got lots of friends down there. And in a pinch, I can even speak Texan if necessary. And I love Dallas, but this is shocking. And, folks, the economy doesn't have anything to do with it, okay? That's just a ridiculous assertion. These poor detectives are just reaching. Because as a detective, you're basically a government employee, and you can't stand up and say that the people writing our laws and the people who are overseeing our judicial system are destroying the country. And they're actually promoting violence and bloodshed in our streets. A detective can't stand up and say that because he'll be fired. And so he says, well, you know, maybe it's the economy. I don't know why a murder a day in Dallas. I remember talking to another heathen, unwashed friend of mine who told me that, look, we're a country of 300 million people. Why do you have such a problem with 15,000 murders a year? It doesn't seem like much to me, he said. And I thought, well, now that's a fine way to be. I mean, talk about lowering your expectations. I mean, come on. One murder is too many murders in the eyes of God and his children, which we are all created in the image of God, and you'd think that reasonable people would agree that any murder is too many murders. But if you stray far enough from the source of wisdom, you create your own wisdom, and it turns out to be really stupid. And that's why you'll go to hell, because God doesn't want to hang out with stupid people. And he's certainly not going to make you hang out with him. All right, not to put too fine a point on it for my unwashed heathen friend, if you're listening, which I seriously doubt. All right, now, how do I go from a murder a day in Dallas to a gay pride fest in Havana? Well, I'll show you how. Dateline Havana from the Associated Press. Cubans have held a short but colorful parade celebrating sexual diversity to mark the International Day Against Homophobia, also known as AIDA. The International Day Against Homophobia, AIDA. I don't know. Maybe they have a logo for it or something, rainbow thing. I didn't know there was an International Day Against Homophobia. I was under the impression that every day was an International Day Against Homophobia. For crying out loud, if you're homophobic, we homophobics have to be in the closet. Yes, I admit I'm afraid of homosexuals. Yes, I fear for their lives, and I fear for the destiny, the ultimate destiny of their souls. Because talk about being separated from the source of all wisdom. To deny even the body that you have, and to deny nature, is to probably the ultimate expression of rebellion against God. And apparently, down in Cuba, all of us in the what do they call us? They call us the capitalist West. I hate that word capitalist because I'm not a capitalist. To be a capitalist implies that everything's all about money, and that's not what everything is all about. But the free exchange of money and the free market is an expression of a free people. So I'd rather they called it freedom, but they call it capitalism. And all of us so-called capitalists have been waiting for Cuba to come into the fold of civilized man. And we've sunk so far down into the cesspool of immorality that one of the markers of Cuba's evolution into a Western style civilization is that they're tolerating homosexuals marching openly down the street. Let's see, Fidel Castro was not at the event, but one of the colorful, shiny participants held a portrait of Fidel Castro as he march down the street in his leather chaps or whatever. I didn't actually see the video. But, I mean, you can imagine, right? We've seen these things before. Castro's niece, by the way, Mariela Castro, she campaigns for gay rights, and she says the march in Havana is meant to, quote, raise awareness about discrimination, unquote. That's according to Fidel Castro's niece, who's an advocate for gay rights. And she doesn't mean the right of people to be happy and gay. She means the right of men to openly promote sodomizing other men. Cuba, according to the article from the Associated Press, is far more tolerant of homosexuality than in the early years after the 1959 revolution, when many gays lost jobs and were imprisoned or sent to work camps or fled in exile. The government in Cuba has even begun paying for Cuban sex change operations in recent years. You know, they have socialized medicine down there in Cuba, and so as Cuba becomes more liberal, instead of becoming good, because they're evil. The Cuban government is an evil regime. And now, in order for them to be accepted by the United States and Europe, they have to become even more evil and pay for people's sex change operations. Anyway, my point on this is this march, which they say is meant to raise awareness about discrimination, really all it's going to do, and that's what all of these homosexual advocates and all these gay pride fests do, is they actually simply raise awareness of homosexuality as an option in the mind of the hapless young people of the nation. Feel like I'm frozen. It's driving me. My head's about to kick. Insanity inside of me. It's like I'm wide awake. Feel like I'm frozen. I'm hypnotized. These feelings got me kicked. His gravity is killing me. I can't stand up for fun. Welcome back to the Weekly Worldview. That was a disturbing tale from down there in Cuba. I mean, just when you think things are getting better down there and you think Fidel Castro might die, it turns out that if he does die, the fags are going to take over. And that's kind of disturbing because Cuba is like a paradise. I mean, I would love to vacation there someday. But if I have to go down there and get into the closet, it's just not worth it. Now, speaking of falling out of the closet, this story is, well, it's all over the place this past week. Well, I shouldn't say all over the place. It was on Piers Morgan, which means 45 people watched it. But there was this article in the Daily Mail from London. If you're eating, you might want to just pause and listen to this after you finish. In fact, after you've well digested everything and it's tamped down into the digestive tract, just to avoid any messy... let's just go to the story. 42-year-old Chastity Bono has offered to help Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie with any issues their daughter Shiloh may struggle with. 4-year-old Shiloh, according to Brangelina, has received attention for her tomboy style, which led to the comments by the drooling Chastity Bono. So Chastity's got her eyes on a 4-year-old Brad and Angelina's kid, Shiloh, and she's chosen to comment in public. She says, quote, "I would love to talk to Brad and Angelina at some point." She said, "to at least let them know that we have this resource for them if they ever need it." Well, what resource would that be, Chaz? Because you've recently undergone a bizarre disorientation and mutilation of your body and your hormonal system there. And I don't know that Brad and Angelina, I don't know them personally, but I doubt they want their daughter to be as screwed up as you are. I mean, I would hope not anyways. Anyway, what is the resource to which Chaz Bono refers? She does volunteer work, according to this article from the Daily Mail. She does volunteer work for a support group which allegedly helps children with gender identity issues. And they also help the families of children with alleged gender identity issues. I put the word alleged in because the folks at Daily Mail, they assume that all this is the gospel truth. But, you know, sometimes I like to stick the word alleged in there just to keep things real. So Chastity, and then this article from the Daily Mail, this really annoys me. They say, he said... quote, "people get too freaked out about kids and what to do with kids. If you just let kids do what they need to do, they usually have the right idea." So, so glaringly obvious that Chastity Bono has no kids. That's the first thing you know. Secondly, why is the Daily Mail leading off that quote by saying, he said? We're talking about Chastity Bono here. No matter how many shots or surgeries or how much facial hair you're able to grow, Chaz, you're still a girl. You'll always be a girl. In fact, to me, you'll always be that cute little girl from 1976 on Mom and Dad's hopelessly pathetic TV show. That's what you'll always be to me, because you were a cute little kid, and now you're a deranged, maniacal, transgendered freak of nature. All right, so she does. If you just let kids do what they need to do, they usually have the right idea, Chaz says. Wow. And so Chaz is ready to step in and help young, what's the girl's name? Shiloh. Help young Shiloh. That's named after a city in the Bible, by the way.
But if she's dressing, she's 4 years old.
She's 4 years old. She likes to wear boyish clothes.
Well, it's the parents dressing.
Well, more than likely.
So they probably take up on that.
Well, that could be. But who knows at 4 years old? Who even cares?
I'm sure she doesn't.
You think Brad and Angelina are probably somehow demented and twisted? What are the odds? No, certainly not. I'm sure they're fine, upstanding, conservative parents doing the best job they can to raise their children in the fear and admonition of the Lord and to teach them right from wrong. I hope so. This is the girl who wore somebody's blood around her neck, didn't she? Well, Angelina Jolie, she was married to another demented, twisted freak. Sling blade guy, and she wore a vial of his blood around her neck. So what are the odds her kids turned out screwed up? And now Chaz is offering her advice to the mix. I mean, somebody, you know, they need to send SEAL Team 6 in to get this kid. I mean, for crying out loud, it's terrifying. Is there more on this? Is there anything more? Chastity Bono has revealed that her mother, Cher, has come to terms with Bono's transformation from a girl to something like a boy, but more like a freak. Cher has even agreed to be interviewed for a documentary that Chaz is making. And Chaz says that the documentary has made her mom proud. So Cher is proud of Chastity becoming a demented freak, and now nobody's shocked by that. Chaz's girlfriend, Jennifer Ilya, whom it began dating in 2005. They say whom he began dating, but I can't let that slide. Chaz's girlfriend, Jennifer Ilya, who Chaz began dating in 2005 while still a woman, the girlfriend has also come to terms with the change, according to Chaz. So here's my big question. What is Chastity Bono's girlfriend? I mean, how would you classify her? Now, she is still, as far as we know, a fully female. And she started dating Chaz while she was apparently a lesbian. And now Chaz has become a boy, but the girlfriend hasn't left. So, I don't know. Is the girlfriend like the fifth gender? I don't know how to classify a girl who dates a girl. The girlfriend becomes a boyfriend. And I guess Chastity Bono has converted her girlfriend from lesbianism.
Yeah.
No.
She said.
Yeah.
What did she say? That thing became boy.
After Chaz became a boy. Yeah.
Things are better.
Things are better now.
Yeah.
So she was a lesbian. She was a heterosexual trapped in a lesbian's body for all those years.
Yeah, she likes it.
She likes it better being with a boy.
Yeah.
Even though Chaz isn't really a boy.
I don't know.
So anyway, the one thing we can tell is that Jennifer Ilya is mentally ill and probably needs some serious psychological help, spiritual help. And Chaz, you know, look, and I know this is going to offend some people. Imagine that. Chastity, some of us are funny looking and have poor eyesight, and we wear glasses and we look kind of geeky. I'm describing myself. And we just deal with it because that's who we are. And Chastity, just because you're a little overweight, that doesn't mean you have to become a freak and decide you need to be a man, chop off all your hair and chop off other, I don't know if she chopped off things or if she had things added. I'm not sure what the whole situation is with Chaz, but, I mean, just go with it. You're just a heavy girl, that's all.
Nice.
Heavy girls can find love, too. They don't need to mutilate themselves in order to make up for, you know, her problem isn't even that bad. I mean, is it worth it, Chaz, to go all through this just so that you can be a fat guy? Because, I mean, people make fun of fat guys, too, in Hollywood. I mean, she has gotten quite a bit bigger since she became a boy.
Yeah.
But I don't know. She probably thinks it's okay. Okay, I'm sorry if I've offended any overweight people in the audience, but, you know, make fun of me being a geeky-looking blonde goofball with glasses, crooked teeth, and all of that. So, anyway, is there anything more? Oh! You have to wonder, why is Chastity Bono all over the news this week? And we find out in the final line of the article from the Daily Mail. Chaz is releasing a book about his experience. Let me scratch that out. Chaz is releasing a book about Chaz's experience, and it's entitled Transition, The Story of How I Became a Man. Okay, she's releasing that book. It's been released this past week. And so, you know, the media are just fawning all over Chaz. They love Chaz because they're all immoral deviants. And they look at Chaz and they say, well, I'm not that freaked out, you know. And so they love Chaz. They love to sit down and encourage Chaz because it makes them feel better about their own dementia. And it's sad for Chaz, really, because all of her friends are there. I wonder if anyone in her circle of friends has sat down and said, Chaz, well, what's up? I mean, come on, stop. But no, it's all encouraged by the deviants. Speaking of the deviants, from digitaljournal.com, last Wednesday, filmmaker Michael Moore announced that he will join the Keith Olbermann team. Keith Olbermann apparently has a new show that's going to premiere in June on Current TV. And it will feature contributions from the likes of Michael Moore, comedian Richard Lewis, and filmmaker Ken Burns. Pretty exciting stuff. Current TV. I think that's Al Gore's cable network. One of the few networks that's actually rated lower than our good friends over at CNN and the hapless Anderson Cooper. Well, we wish them all the best of luck. The one good thing is that they'll all be in one place on May 21st, 2011, when the Judgment Day comes. I don't know what to say about that. I just had to say that because it's amazing to me that Michael Moore still has a career, and it just shows you how upside down things have become. And Michael, if you're listening, I did not mean to insult you as an overweight American. Just want to make that clear. All right. So after all that depressing news, I would like to introduce a story that might cheer us all up just a little bit from Fox, New York. A mob of angry protesters chased a would-be flag burner at Louisiana State University off campus last Wednesday to the chants of USA, USA. Graduate communications student Benjamin Haas had been given permission by the school to burn the American flag, but because he lacked a local burn permit, he agreed instead to read a statement in the area of the university known as Free Speech Alley. So this is how free speech is at our universities. There's a specific place where you can go to utter free speech. Everywhere else, apparently, the voice code, speech code, is enforced, except here in Free Speech Alley. Well, this hippie, a neo-hippie, or whatever you want to call him, he read his statement, and as he was reading his hippie, communist, leftist, pinko, scumbag statement, a crowd erupted around him, shouting, "Go to hell, hippie, go to hell." like any fine American would shout at a hippie who's going to threaten to burn the American flag. Eventually, the police had to escort the hippie away from the Americans. Who, well, there might have been There might have been injuries. There might have been violence. Haas's actions, according to Fox TV in New York, were in response to the arrest of another student who was charged with taking and burning. Listen to this. He was charged with taking and burning the American flag once posted at LSU's War Memorial. And this other hippie who was arrested took the flag off the War Memorial and burned it just a few hours after the announcement of Osama bin Laden's killing by American forces last week. So that's the modern liberal student's response to the announcement that American forces have killed the most wanted terrorist on the planet. The hippies burn the flags off the war memorials at their colleges. An LSU spokesman said the school endorsed neither Haas's actions nor those of the crowd that wanted to beat him down. LSU just wants to let everyone know that as an institution of higher learning, they have no idea what they believe in. It's the Weekly Worldview, and thank you for being with us. Let's get on. I got a lot of stories here in the last segment. I'm not sure if I can get to them all, but listen quickly, and I'll do my best. Dateline New York from Fox News again. The leader of the International Monetary Fund and possible candidate for president of France was pulled off an airplane moments before he was to fly to Paris and was being questioned by police in connection with a sexual assault of a maid in a hotel. Yeah. Not surprising, right, for a French presidential candidate. The 32-year-old maid at the hotel told authorities that she entered this fella's room. What's his name? Dominique Strauss-Kahn. She entered Dominique's room at the Sofitel near Manhattan's Times Square at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and Dominique threw her down and tried to sexually assault her. But being a Frenchman, the maid was able to beat the crap out of him and basically leave the room. I shouldn't joke about that, but she apparently did prevent him from having his way with her. And she's a hero in my book, even though he's just French. That's still pretty good. The New York Police Department discovered that the leader of the International Monetary Fund, he was at the airport. And so the police contacted the Port Authority, who plucked Khan from the actual airplane that was about to leave. It had not yet departed. They say that he left his hotel, leaving behind his mobile phone and other personal items. But police were quick to say that it wasn't immediately clear if the 62-year-old head of the IMF had been planning to leave the country. So he left his cell phone, his wallet, his keys, and everything at the hotel. He's on a plane, but the police don't want to imply that he was trying to flee after being beaten up by a girl. The IMF had no immediate comment, as you can well imagine. By the way, Dominique Strauss-Kahn is he's married to his third wife, Anne, and he is the father of four children. And he's dictating monetary policy across the planet for the third world, and apparently likes to rape women. And now he's been caught, and we're glad for that. Thanks to another fine American standing up in the face of a terrorist attack and putting an end to it. My hat is off to the maid at the Sofitel in Manhattan. Nice work. All right. Here we go. Let's go to Indiana from the Personhood File. A tough new abortion law. Tough new abortion law. This is according to the Associated Press. A tough new abortion law cut off public funding for Planned Parenthood. Last Wednesday, a U.S. district judge denied Planned Parenthood of Indiana's request for a temporary restraining order. This tough new abortion law will go into effect and cut off funding for public funding for Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood had wanted to keep the funds flowing while it challenged the law. Folks, this is how far we've fallen. A tough new abortion law would actually prevent abortions. I mean, for an abortion law to be tough, you would think, at least in my economy, you would think that it would prevent abortions. That would be a tough abortion law. But no, this is just to cut off some a little bit of the public money that goes for abortions. Legislative Director for Indiana Right to Life said, quote, "This isn't about health care services. This is about abortion," unquote. So to all my pro-life friends out there, I realized not long ago that we've all been victimized by the newspeak intelligentsia. Abortion is a misnomer. This is not about abortion. You know, abortion can apply to any number of situations. If a pilot is going to land his plane, but he realizes there's a problem, he can abort the landing. If a pilot's going to take off and he realizes that one of his engines shut down, he aborts the takeoff. This isn't about abortion. This is about child killing. This is about the murder of innocent children. And calling it abortion just softens the blow. So I'm sick of it. I'm going to try my best not to use that term anymore. I'm just going to call it child killing because that's what it's about. It's about killing innocent people. Innocent children, by the way. The law was signed by Mitch Daniels, who's apparently running for president. The funding cuts are part of the new law that also bans abortion after the 20th week of pregnancy, unless, this is a tough new abortion law, we're gonna end all abortions after 20 weeks, unless there's a substantial threat to the woman's life or health. And of course, it's up to the pro-choice community to determine what a substantial threat is. It's probably up to judges and lawyers who've actually participated in abortions, who've participated in the murder of innocent children. It's up to them to determine what a substantial threat to a woman's life or health is. Signed by Mitch Daniels, the law, according to the article from the AP, the law could improve Daniels' status among social conservatives because most social conservatives are morons. And they think regulating the murder of innocent people can be done in a conservative manner. We're social conservatives. We want to only kill some innocent people. We want to let other innocent people live, but some we want to kill. We're social conservatives. Pretty sad state of affairs. But Mitch Daniels, achieving the first step of any Republican presidential campaign, first bamboozle the Christians. Congratulations, Mr. Daniels. Well done. The rapper at the White House, should I talk about this? Is pretty old news, but I've got a story from the Washington Times. The White House last week defended the decision to invite a hip-hop artist to a celebration of poetry hosted by Barry Ho and his M.O. The hip-hop artist has spoken very, very forcefully out against violence. He's spoken out against misogynist lyrics. That's according to Press Secretary Jay Carney. The rapper has a song called A Song for Asada. It celebrates a former Black Panther who was convicted of killing a New Jersey state trooper. Anyway, I saw a video of this artist who I was not aware of. He goes to Jeremiah Wright's church. He's a personal friend of Barry Ho's M.O. And folks, this is who Barry and Michelle really are. The outrage on all the Rush Limbaugh counterfeit copies out there, i.e. Sean Hannity and others, the list. The outrage on their part, it confused me. I don't see how could you possibly be surprised? But I guess it makes for good radio. I don't know. I was not surprised at all. I was surprised that they allowed the video of the guy rapping in front of Jeremiah Wright to circulate. I found that to be pretty interesting. Let's see here. But Barry Ho, after hosting the rapper, he's now focusing on the economy like a laser. He's over 2 years into his presidency, and the economy's been in just dismal condition since he came on board And 2 years in now, he's got an election to win. He's going to focus like a laser on the economy. In a town hall-style meeting conducted by CBS News last Wednesday, Barry was quoted as saying, quote, "It is time for companies to step up. American taxpayers contributed to that process of stabilizing the economy that my administration has participated in. Companies have benefited from that, and they're making a lot of money, and now it's time for them to start betting on American workers and American products." So he wants companies to step up and start hiring. Barry has no understanding of free market economics. Barry, companies don't bet on workers. They hire workers when they need work to be done. And right now there's a bit of uncertainty as to where you're taking the country economically, socially, spiritually, morally. There's a bit of uncertainty, Barry. And the companies aren't going to start betting on workers with all that uncertainty in the air, Barry. But then again, you're a Marxist, so I don't expect you to understand free market economics. It's okay, Barry. I understand. Obama, according to CNBC, Obama pressed his case that his administration's work to improve the economy had paid dividends, saying the manufacturing sector was especially strong in part of his decision to rescue the auto industry. So this is how a Marxist thinks. Barry, you didn't rescue the auto industry. You kept the failing auto industry away from the entrepreneurs who could actually fix it and save it. By allowing General Motors to go on as constituted, you prevented the people who could actually fix it and save it from getting hold of it because you took it over. So the Marxists are running GM and they say they've rescued it. Barry's got a savior complex, and there's no one around him telling him he's not the savior, so you would expect him to have a savior complex. Anyway, just embarrassing, Barry. But there is some good news out of Barry Ho's mouth this week. According to Fox News, President Obama is directing his administration to ramp up U.S. oil production by extending existing leases in the Gulf of Mexico and off Alaska's coast and holding more frequent lease sales in a federal petroleum reserve in Alaska. Obama said Saturday that the measures, quote, make good sense, unquote. But he acknowledges that they won't help immediately bring down gasoline prices. And see, this is what Barry doesn't understand. If Barry was serious... And everyone knows he's not serious because he made almost this exact same speech a year ago and he hasn't done any of it. But if he was serious and he came out and made a speech that he was going to increase drilling, oil prices would drop the next day. And there's a good chance that they'll drop on Monday because of this speech, even though it's regarded as disingenuous by anyone who's thinking, but there's a chance that they'll drop immediately. Barry could help gas prices fall immediately. If he would do some of this stuff seriously. But he's a Marxist. He doesn't understand. And Barry, we understand that you don't understand. And we just want to make sure that as soon as possible, you get into a line of work.
You're the one who sets the bar. The hairdo king, the fashion's are your fabulous.
I'm fabulous.
Oh, I'm fabulous.
Is that Barry's song?
Yeah.
No. So anytime I mention Barry's economic policy, I have to expect that?
I'm sorry.
Okay. He is fabulous, though. Okay. Now, you've got Barry meddling around the edges of the free market, and we've got other government officials busying themselves down in, where is this, in Texas? My goodness, is this Texas? Oh, this is sad. This is from Reuters. Using a $2 million grant from the Department of Agriculture, schools in San Diego are installing sophisticated cameras in the cafeteria line and in the trash area of the cafeteria that read food barcodes embedded on the food trays. Yeah, a government official down there, some doctor who's a part of the bureaucracy down there, he says, quote, "We're going to snap a picture of the food the children put in their tray at the cashier, so we'll know what's been served. And then they're going to take a picture of what the kids throw away. It's all going to be tracked by barcodes. They're implementing this pilot program at 5 Texas schools with high rates of childhood obesity and children living in poverty, which is, I mean, only in America do you have communities with high rates of child obesity and also high rates of poverty. Maybe we need to reevaluate what poverty means. I mean, generally, people who are poor aren't overweight. I mean, that's been true in the past, but it's apparently not true anymore. Anyway, this doctor, working for the kleptocracy there in Texas, says when the child goes back to the disposal window, we're going to measure the leftovers. The goal of the program is to cut down on childhood obesity. And I'm just going to put allegedly in there. The goal of the program, the alleged goal of the program, is to cut down on childhood obesity. But it's probably more about some guy's cousin's nephew who has a camera and a barcode scanning business. And his cousin happens to work for the kleptocracy, and he got the gig. And what they're going to take pictures of the kids' lunch and what they throw away. If the effort is successful in San Antonio, Reuters tells us, the plan is to be implemented in other elementary schools nationwide. So the cousin down in Texas with the barcode scanner and the camera business, he really hopes this works, because then he gets a fat contract and he can hire the cousins and nephews of other members of the kleptocracy, and they can just keep that whole thing going for, well, I mean, who knows? Okay, so I've been fooling around. Should I do a serious story? One more serious story. This is a serious story I'm going to do before we close. Dateline Christchurch, New Zealand, ironically enough. A New Zealand mother is angry that her 16-year-old daughter had a secret abortion arranged by a school counselor at her government school. Yeah. The grandmother found out about the termination of the pregnancy. That's right, the grandmother, I said. Yeah, because this 16-year-old girl who killed her baby, she was a mother. She is the mother. She's just a mother of a baby that she murdered. And her mother is the grandmother. So the grandmother found out the baby was killed 4 days after it happened. She said, I was horrified. I was horrified that she had to go through it on her own. I was horrified that her friends and her counselors felt that she shouldn't talk to us, her parents. She said, I didn't know they could do that at her school. The grandma was astonished. She said, astonished that teachers could discuss how a student was doing in school or phone parents when their child misbehaved, but would keep life-changing situations such as killing a baby a secret. This mother was shocked. One parent said, she says the law in New Zealand that allows government school counselors to take young girls to abortion clinics and kill their babies without ever letting the parents know. She says this law caters to the lowest common denominator, because the law, you see, ladies and gentlemen, is constructed around pregnancy as a result of incest or rape. So in New Zealand, and of course nothing like this would ever happen in our country, certainly never, I'm sure, these laws that say we're going to allow babies who are a result of incest or rape to be killed, what these laws do, folks, once you abandon the personhood of the innocent child in the womb, there is no law. There are no rules anymore. You've legalized the killing of innocent people, and you're shocked that your school would subvert talking to the parents? You've authorized murder. You've set up an infrastructure to facilitate murder, and you're surprised that the murderers would lie to you. You're a fool. If you send your children to a government school, whether it's in New Zealand or New Jersey or New Mexico, you are sinning against your child, you're sinning against God, and you will be held accountable on Judgment Day for what you've done. You will be held accountable. All right. We've come to the end, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to end in California. Although at the beginning of the show, I believe the world was scheduled to begin ending in New York, we're going to end in California. San Francisco. San Francisco is poised to become the first U.S. city to restrict delivery of the Yellow Pages business directories within their city limits. That's right. The Board of Supervisors in San Francisco cast a 10-to-1 vote to ban unrequested and business delivery of the hefty telephone directories. The idea, allegedly, is to protect the environment. Folks, I think, what do we do with our Yellow Pages? They come We throw them away. We don't use the Yellow Pages. But should people be free to print and distribute the Yellow Pages? I think they should. It's called freedom. But in San Francisco, allegedly to protect the environment, they're going to halt or restrict delivery, production, and hopefully drive the Yellow Pages out of business. I think if you control freaks in San Francisco could just wait a few years, the Yellow Pages will go away by themselves, for crying out loud. But they just want to control people. And what else? Oh, yeah, ending. Speaking of ending in California, in a joint statement last Monday, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Maria Shriver announced their separation after 25 years of marriage. They said they'll keep raising their four children together, and they say that their children are, quote, the light and the center of both of our lives. But now we just really want to get on with our lives. Anyway, so there you have it. There's the end, huh? That's the end. All right, well, it is the end of the show, folks. I want to thank you for being with us. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. Be sure to go there and check out Christianity 101. I want to thank my friends at Theology Online, at Personhood USA, at American Right to Life, and of course, I must, as always, thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.